Welcome to Once Upon a Taster podcast. I am Jamie Penders, and in this podcast, I'm on a journey to discover the most remarkable and everyday flavor experiences. With short stories, tastings, fun facts, and appetizing conversations about taste experience. There's no arguing about taste, but there's sure a lot to talk about. Once Upon a Taste, a podcast that brings taste to the table. In 2019, Halle Amos van Meulen started to share the food that she grew up with in the form of weekly homemade takeaway menus, workshops and private and corporate catering, focusing on a diversity of Turkish cuisine. Halle shows that Turkish food has so much more to offer than kebabs. In October of 2022, her Dutch cookbook, De Bijbel van de Turkse Keuken, The Bible of the Turkish Kitchen, was released in the Netherlands, with which she brought Turkish cuisine closer to our hearts. Now everybody can experience and enjoy the bounties of the Turkish kitchen. Enjoy delicious, rich and diverse Turkish dishes, mezes and homemade hearty meals through Turkish Tale, where every dish has a story. From börek to baklava, from meze and dolmas to pides and pilaf. So, Halle, thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me too.
We always start the podcast with asking the guest to select a product or ingredient that holds a fond flavor memory. What did you choose and what story is connected to it?
Yes, I chose a whole sumak. Mm-hmm. So these are the whole sumak. They're like dried sumak berries. Mm-hmm. So this is the whole sumak berries before they turn into the powder that we always, you know, put on our dishes. So this is, in Turkey, we use these to make a dolma water, dolma juice. Mm-hmm. So you soak these in hot water and then they release an intense sour taste to the water. And then you pour that water over the dolmas to cook it. Yeah. And I never knew this basically like this as a whole sumak. Until our neighbors basically gave it to us, and they use it to make their own dolmas with it, and their recipe was just amazing. And yeah, I would constantly go to their house to have the dolma. And yeah, my friend, yeah, the neighbor and the friend, so they would like invite me like once a week because they would make the dolma every week.
And he knew you liked
yes.
it so much.
So they, yeah, once the mom, because it's a Turkish mom, so once the mom like knows that you like a dish, she makes it every week. And then they were inviting me every week. Mm. And it was, the dolma was like very flavorful. It was like sour and salty and a bit spicy. And I just like loved it so much. And when they learned that we were going to move to another place, so the mom gave a bag of these whole sumaks and a pot of the dolma to my mom, mm-hmm. with alongside the recipe of her dolma, so she could make it for me.
Wow, what a treasure.
Yes, so since then, we always have now the whole sumak in our house, and it's been, I think, like 25 years since my mom has the recipe from our neighbor. So I just always think about, whenever I think about my childhood and the hospitality of Turkish people, and the giving and everything with the food, it's always remember this dish and this ingredient particularly, because it was the first time I learned about the whole sumak through our neighbors.
Oh, so, yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Is this recipe in your book?
Yep, it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I'm really curious. Like for everybody that doesn't know what a dolma is, can you explain a little bit?
Yes, dolma is basically any stuffed vegetable. We basically use rice for it as a base, but you can also use meat and rice together to make it more meaty. Mm. And of course we have vegan versions for it too. But this particular dish is made with dried aubergines, dried bell peppers. Mm. And
dried aubergines?
Yes.
Wow.
Dried
that must be like very flavorful.
It is, because the aubergine has its own smoky sourness to it. So when you use these whole sumak as the water for it, it turns into a very intense like flavor explosion. Mm. And you can also use vine leaves too together, but we call vine leaves sarma, which means rolling. Mm. So that's the only different part of the words dolma and sarma. So I'd like to clear that out too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the dried aubergine, is that something you dry it yourself or where
no.
do you buy it?
No, I buy it. We can find it here in the Turkish markets too, or you can find it online. They do it in the southeast part of Turkey. So they just, because it's basically to use and preserve it for winter time, because aubergine season is summer.
Yeah.
So they just buy it and they hollow it out, and then they put a needle and a thread. So they hang them together and then they dry it out under the sun to be used in winter. So you just soak it in hot water, like boil it, and then the shell softens. So you just like fill it.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I need to try that. Well, and speaking of your book, in October of 2022, you released your cookbook, The Bijbel van een Turkse Keuken. Yeah. With more than 230 recipes, yes. It showcases dishes from 7 different regions. Can you take us a little bit along with you in the journey from how this idea of the cookbook became reality to the moment you had the first copy in your hands?
Oh, yeah, it happened like with an email, basically, like that there my publishing house was like wanted to release a Bible from the Turkse Keuken, because they already have other land Bibles, Indian, Italian, French, and Dutch. So it was very intense for me. I was very surprised, because it was a very big responsibility. And yeah, and it's like more than 200 recipes. So it was like a very big chaotic thing for me, like where to start and where to begin. But yeah, it was a very nice, because like my editor was very helpful in that case. So she helped me put and take baby steps on, you know, to put everything on a correct direction. But yeah, so I put everything down. I, of course, started calling friends, family, my mom and her friends. So everyone was getting together, because it was very important to me, because I think that Turkish cuisine is not represented good enough in Europe, basically, because there is just this, you know, doner kebab idea. And here in the Netherlands, there's kapsalon. It's not Turkish. So there is that, you know, that case of how they see Turkish cuisine. So it was like my first mission to break that. And I really wanted to make sure that every recipe was authentic. You know, it was not turned into the Dutch palate or Belgian palate. And so I just wanted to make sure everything was real as possible.
Yeah, authentic.
Exactly. But tracking down the recipes was not that hard, because the only part hard was actually, we do have like 7 regions, but there are some regions that claim the dishes themselves. So it was so hard for me to figure it out which one is which, you know, like there is like a soup and then, yeah, it's supposed to be in the Eastern, but then you go like the Black Sea claims it, you know, like some things like that. So it was very hard to track the origin of it. And yeah, and of course, measurements was a big, I wrote that in the book too. The measurements, Turkish people don't use measuring cups or measuring spoons. So we just use the regular tablespoon, you know, like the soup spoon basically you have, regular random glass like this can be your cup. So it was so hard to track the exact measurements. That was very hard, especially with my mom, because she has the thing that, oh, you know, you're gonna know, you know, when you add the spice to it, the salt to it, or the consistency of the dough. We had the earlobe consistency, and it was just like a bit of a, you know, like a roller coaster. So it was a bit intense in that sense to write them down, like with the measuring everything. That was hard. The hardest part for me was that.
Yeah.
But I do believe, like, I even told my publisher too, like, I think like we can do another Bible on the Turkse Keuken, because we have so many recipes. So another 200 of those, that I actually had to cut out some recipes because I had too
part
much.
Two.
But yeah, we did the photo shoot, and it was very intense too, because I had to cook a lot of dishes and in a short period of time, but everything turned out amazing. And I my publisher and my editor came back to drop off my book before it was released.
Yeah.
And so when I held it in my hand, I started just like crying when I was flipping the pages, because it was the dishes I grew up with, or the dishes I had memories with, you know, my mom made it in her kitchen all the time. And when I saw the photos and was like holding the book, I started just like crying, because it was a very intense experience. And to see it out there, you know, it's like my grandmother's recipe is in the book. It's written. So I think that was just a big thing for me, you know, like whenever I look back in my career, it's just going to be the biggest thing I've ever achieved in my life. So that's, yeah, a memorable moment for me.
And the beautiful photos in your book are made by Elva.
Yes.
And she has been in the previous episode of this podcast. So it's really cool to have that connection here. Where were you when you received the first copy of your own cookbook? What did you do?
I was at home. So my publisher and my editor came by. So I remember we just like opened the book and I was just flipping the pages. It was so surreal.
Yeah.
I just remember just like crying when I saw the dishes, and I was like hugging my editor and my publisher, and it was just a very intense feeling because it was so much hard work. Because like I said, it's so hard to check the recipes. I mean, we have the recipes, the measurements were just the hardest part for me.
Yeah, it's very subjective.
Yeah, because
you want to get it right.
Because when you think about it, the soup spoons are 10 milliliters and the tablespoons we use for measuring is 50 milliliters. So I remember when they were telling me, okay, it's a tablespoon, and I would do it and the recipe was not working. And I was like, okay, this is not right. Or because the tablespoon you use for something to measure it, like when you're taking the batter for a pancake batter, like kind of thing, is not the same when the other tablespoon has more surface.
Yes.
So I was...
So frustrating.
Exactly. Like everything changes. And especially with the flour, that was another issue for me too. Because there's patent bloom. And then there is the regular bloom. And then there is Amerikaanse patent bloom. So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that struggle. Yes. Like which flour do you use?
And it was very, very later I realized when a couple of friends in the Netherlands were like testing recipes and like, okay, mine came out like this. The other one said like, mine came out like this. And I was like, no, that's not supposed to come out like that. So when I put down, yeah, it was because I was using patent bloom from everything and I was getting better texture with bready stuff and they were getting it more dense and crumbly. So I was like, okay, now try patent bloom. So that was a bit of a struggle because in Turkey, it's easier to track down the flour because you can go to the market and say like, yeah, I want a flour to make baklava I want to make flour to make bread or simit. So it's easier to track down the flours than here in the Netherlands.
And people actually have the knowledge about that.
Yeah.
Here it's like, I don't know. That's like, bloom. This is flour. I don't know the difference
bloom, that's it,
between
yeah.
flour and like wholemeal and... It's very funny. Yeah, but that also shows the importance of testing the recipes by other people.
Yeah.
Like, you're absolutely in it and you know the tricks, but like the foolproof versions of...
Exactly.
That's a great achievement to have.
But I learned a lot from the flour, so that's really like it helped me a lot too. Like when I was... I didn't know that. I thought everyone was using patent bloom until this time.
Yeah. Flour will never be the same for you.
Yeah. So now I just know, you know, all the differences and the protein and everything, the ash ratio or something. So it helped me a lot in that sense.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. And your cookbook holds an enormous amount of delicious recipes, like we already said. Which recipe is the most dear to you?
Oh, yeah, that's so hard. I think one of them is... it's barbunya pilaki. It's kivitzbonen in olayfoli. And that was just a staple in my mom's meze menu every New Year's. And yeah, it reminds me of summer. And one of the other ones is rice with aubergine. It's called patlıcanlı pilav. And that is a bit very... it always reminds my grandmother's and summer house. And it's just like pure childhood for me. Because we would eat it cold after the sea with some like watermelon on the side. So it's just like pure childhood there for me. And other one was there's another with meatballs with a tomato sauce, but that's not the recipe itself, but the photo itself actually. Because Elvan, the photographer I worked with for my book, she had one of the backdrops that was exactly the same tiles of my grandmother's terrace in her summer house. And so when I saw it, I said, like, please let's use this in one of the photos in that region, because, you know, it just reminds of that. And when we use it, I just like couldn't imagine. And just like, so that photo is specifically like so emotional for me in that sense.
So when
I said, yeah.
Oh, that's very cool to hear. And as you were saying, you interviewed friends and family for your recipes and did lots of test cooking for the cookbook. How long did it take you to finish all the recipes? Because of that important aspect of cooking with the senses and the recipes are rather passed on in metaphors than in exact measurements. How long?
I think we had the talk in September in 2021. And then So I immediately started, but I already had a couple of recipes in my hand too that were tested that I do sell for my customers, you know, and I just have it in my hand from just like writing it down myself. So it, in that sense, I was a bit lucky ahead.
Mm.
But for the rest, it was just, oh, day and night. And so it took me, I think, around 6 months to wrap everything up, also writing it and cooking it. So that was a intense period, yeah.
Oh, but the hard work paid off.
Oh, yes.
Your website is named Turkish Tale.
Yes.
And also in your cookbook, every recipe starts with a little tale because every dish has a story
yes.
to it. How do you experience this connection of flavors and stories? Where is that coming from?
I don't know, because I do feel like Turkish people, and not Turkish people, but Turkish cuisine, when you look at the background, it has a lot of dishes, has its own story. So it is not just a simple dish. You know, when you look at it, I think almost every dish we have in our kitchen has a backstory to it, because like it can come from the Ottoman cuisine. And then there is a reason the dish came into our kitchen, you know. So I think that's a really nice connection that we have in our cuisine. And I just like carried it along, I think, with my personal stories, but still using the same original stories. But also when I'm reintroducing a dish, I'm adding my own memory to it. So it's just like full of stories and from our cuisine.
It's also a wonderful way to really embrace a new recipe, because of the story, it really starts to grow on you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. And your mother and also your grandmother are a big inspiration for your cooking. What
Definitely.
Role did they play in your culinary upbringing?
My grandmother is like a typical grandmother. She would do everything, you know, and my mom would not do too much doughy dishes or fried food and stuff. So my grandmother would be that, you know, like little the one who bakes, the one who has all the naughty food, you know, in her house. And she and my grandfather would just like go in the kitchen together, and she would just like let my grandfather chop things, and then she would do the main big events herself. So I would just like, I don't know, sit down there and watch her, and then she would let me do things. So I just like spend all my time in the kitchen, and same with my mom too. She would just, oh, I got this, you just sit here and watch, you know. And I think that played a big, big role in that, just being able to watch and absorb everything.
Yeah.
And by time, of course, like my mom's trust increased by the time I got like slightly older. But I think seeing them, my grandmother and my mom has everything. They constantly taste. So it's not like they, of course, eyeball things of doing it for many, many years.
Hmm.
But one thing I know, that even my grandmother is now like, I think, 93. Until this day, she bakes a dessert that she makes it every year and every Eid. But still, sometimes she still sits down and criticizes herself, like, okay, this time I didn't like the syrup, you know, it's still not. She still has a room to improve in her own, even though she's been doing the same dessert for 70 years. So I see that as something to take in as well, you know, because I am the same too. Like, I always like over criticize myself in my cooking. And my mom does have the same thing too. Like, she even says that it sometimes if she's in a down mood, her dish doesn't turn out good, even though she's making it for years again.
Mm.
And again, like watching them being so precise in everything, and I, no matter what, they always use seasonal ingredients. So all of these helped a lot, you know, for me to have the passion and I don't know, like knowledge, and not knowledge, but you know, to trust my instincts too. So I think that's very important.
Oh, it's really cool that you're pointing out about if she's in a bad mood, then
yeah.
you taste it in a food. And that really shows that dishes really have a personality
yes.
by the one who is preparing it.
Definitely.
And I heard you say eat. Is that a celebration? Can you explain
something?
Yes,
we have Eid. What is it? Eid is in the circular faced.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have one is the offer-faced. Offer-faced, yeah. So one is for offering, and then the other one is for sugar feast, which happens after Ramadan.
Mm.
And yeah, that one is like more intense with the candies and everything. And the other one is where you have the sacrification of the animal. Mm. So there are two different Eids, but you can choose to eat desserts on both of them, of course. But the other one is mainly focused on the sacrification. So you, if you are following it, the religion, and then you basically do it through organizations or anything. And but yeah, those hold a lot of big memories in our childhood. We didn't do the sacrification part much. After, I think my grandmother would do it a couple of years, but then we stopped that basically. But we would still celebrate it, you know, just like the family being together. So you don't have to do it, but
just symbolic. You just,
exactly. So you can just like spend time with your family and it's a holiday. Mm. And the sugar feast was the biggest one that we would always celebrate it. Mm. And that just like holds a lot of memory of my grandmother's making desserts in tents and my mom too bringing. So it was just like a sugar coma for everyone. And and yeah, we would get money. And because that's the thing too, you just, you walk around as a kid and then you can't even go to the neighbors. So you knock their doors and so you're like, oh, like happy Bayram and happy Eid. And then they would give you like money in a napkin. So it's like, yeah, hidden in a napkin. Or oh. They can give you candy. So it's like kind of like a trick or treat kind of.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Never heard about that. That's
so it was like the perfect time. So we go like and then count the money we would have, you know, like you get from your father, your grandmothers and this.
Yes.
So like the bigger family you have, the more cash you have. And it was like the best time, you know, to count the money and then like buy something for yourself.
Oh.
And eat candy and dessert. I mean, it's
what's not to love? Yeah, right? And speaking of mothers, you became a mother yourself 3 years ago. And this was during a period that you were exploring the cuisines of your Turkish and Palestinian roots more.
Yes.
What traditions, flavors, or techniques do you want to pass on to your son?
Oh, that's a great question. I do really like that he is already showing so much interest in cooking. And especially he likes rolling out doughs. So I think I would definitely, if he's of course interested, we have like long dough rollers. And it's called oklava. And that does have a bit of a special technique to roll out the dough very thin. So it's like see-through thin.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best way to make baklava, those using those dough rollers. And it's something I didn't learn from my mom, but I learned from my grandmother. So I would definitely want to pass it to him, you know, if he's ever interested. And of course, like making dolmas, you know, like stuffing them and rolling vine leaves. And yeah, of course, like cooking with his feelings is one of the things that I would like for him, of course, to have it as well.
Oh, wonderful. And what is a staple in your home? What is always in your fridge or cabinet that you can't live without?
Well, it's so easy. One is yogurt.
Oh, yeah,
that is just, it's always in my fridge, like no matter what. And of course, tomato paste, pepper paste. Those three, I probably won't have like something else, but you're gonna find those three for sure.
Holy Trinity.
Exactly, the Holy Trinity. Yeah, that's like the Turkish cuisine in a nutshell, like pepper paste, tomato paste, and yogurt. Mm. And I think red lentil and bulgur would be the second. And for spices, I think it's pul biber and dried mint. It's just like those are, I think, the top ingredients.
Oh, that's wonderful. Like, is there a special kind of shop in Eindhoven you can recommend?
I actually like do a lot in İzmir Market for like my just regular daily Turkish stuff. And then I go to Mega Center for buying gadgets and stuff too. Like you can find künefe plates and then the dough rollers that I told you about.
Ooh, do they also have the special cookie molds and stuff?
Yeah, they have the kembe.
Cookie
mold.
I love that. I need to get those. I'm looking for them for so long.
The wooden ones, you're saying, right?
Yes. Yeah,
they have them there too.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And last year was an enormously busy year for you working to the release of the book. You've had a wonderful book launch party, including a borek making workshop. What has last year brought you and what are your desires for the future?
Oh, yeah, last year was just like an emotional roller coaster for me because there was the stress of making the book perfect as I can. And then, of course, like the short period of time that I have to, you know, give the recipes and the book and the photo shoot and everything. So, and in between, my mom flew to help me out because we have a kid, you know, and it's very stressful to do the dishes. So from stressful to gratitude to happiness to a bit of like a depression in between.
Yeah, like you fall in this.
Yeah, I mean, there is exactly. So it's like, I we even joked like giving birth and that those emotions was like nothing compared to this big cycle of emotions that I went through. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's crazy to write 238 recipes. And sometimes I like, oh my God, like, so there are like a lot of mixed feelings there. And then there's just like enormous happiness and a bit of a pride, you know, for doing this as an expat, especially, you know, that is very important for me. Mm. And yeah, it was just like a very good year in that sense. And for the future, I still just want to keep, of course, improving myself in that, in my cooking. And but I do want to push a bit, you know, with the Turkish cuisine in the Netherlands and keep trying to showcase it as much as I can in the most authentic way and in the simple way, let's say.
Yeah, like take as over the Netherlands with more authentic Turkish cuisine.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of a random question to close off, but I have to ask this.
Of course.
On your Instagram, when you launch your weekly takeaway menus, you always share these retro cutout photographs. Where are they from? Is it some kind of TV show or something?
No, there are actually, we have it called Yeşilçam. It's called Green Pine. So it's basically our old Hollywood from the 70s.
Oh.
So it's these famous TV movie characters, or yeah, most of them are movie characters, and they're very famous. And so they're like old school. And so that's why like half of them are black and white. And they're like cult movies too. So I'm just using those characters and just using them as a bit like to promote that side of the, you know, in Turkey. And of course, to give some nostalgia to Turkish people in the Netherlands, in Eindhoven.
Yeah.
So that's why I love using those.
Yeah, I needed to know that. I saw it all the time. And I thought, yeah, there must be an idea behind this. Oh, well, that's a wonderful way to close this podcast off. Thank you so much,
Thank
Hala.
You for having me, Jamie.
Yeah, thank so you nice. So much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
And it was a delight to meet you and to be here. And I'm like sure this. Excited to explore the Turkish kitchen more. And if you do too, then absolutely follow Hala at turkish.tale on Instagram. Visit her website via www.turkishtale.nl. Oh, that was a really Dutch thing. www.turkishtale.nl to sign up for a Turkish cooking workshop or order delicious Turkish meals and mezes from Hala's kitchen. And of course, check out the Bible van de Turkse Keuken to explore new Turkish recipes at home. And if you like listening to Once Upon a Taste, the podcast, please rate the podcast with stars. This helps us to reach more and more people with flavorful stories. And never hesitate to send me a message. I always like to hear who is listening. Until the next episode of Once Upon a Taste, the podcast.
Hungry for more? Subscribe to Once Upon a Taste, the podcast, to never miss an appetizing episode. Follow me on Instagram at onceuponataste.podcast or check onceuponataste.com. Do you have a cool story to tell? A written short story to read aloud? Or perhaps an interesting question or topic? Just let me know via info@onceuponataste.com. Until the next episode of Once Upon a Taste, a podcast that brings taste to the table.